thanks for downloading the audio podcast of this week's sermon. We pray you'll be blessed and encouraged with the words you hear.
Myself and my wife, whenever we're watching a film, I'm kind of renowned to be one of those people who always asks what happened now or who is that, or and I especially do that whenever it's one of those films that goes backwards and forwards. Have you ever had one of those series where they start off in the middle and then it reverts back again? And I thought he was already dead, or I thought they were already married. And my wife will go, no, this is relapsed 10 years ago. So I'm usually too busy on my phone or doing something else really to keep up with that. I'm going to do what I hate. I'm going to do a little bit of that in my testimony tonight as I go through. And I'm going to start a little bit in the middle, and then I'm going to go back to something which is so, so relevant to me in my life. I suppose if I had to sum up my testimony and put it into three little titles tonight, I'm not going to preach, but I suppose if I was to put it into three little titles, it would be something like empty hands, ugly heart, ugly shoes, but joyful hearts. Empty hands and ugly shoes, but joyful hearts. As Paula said, I'm married to Joanne. If she was here tonight, she might be struggling a little bit more with the accent than I am. And that is for a very good reason, is that Joanne grew up the most of her life in Portugal. She lived there until she was the age of 18. Whilst her parents were born in Northern Ireland, she spent very, very little time here. So Portuguese was her first language. And when she spoke English, she spoke it with a bit of an American accent, learning it from TV and from films. So I became known as Andrew instead of Andrew for a little while. So that has been dropped now in our house. But so I had went across to Portugal on a charity event, and had her mother and father were involved in this campsite that we were working on, and we had met there. So it was a lovely romantic story, completely by accident, not because of who I am, and most definitely not because of who she is. We're not the most romantic people in the world, but if you write our story, it sounds very romantic. We met on a beach and we fell in love, and then she continued to live there for a year, and we flew back and forwards and seen each other. So we had to work really, really hard and save up, work 6 days a week and save up and get a flight and take a week off. And it was before the days of Facebook and Bebo or whatever it was back even in those days, or MySpace, before any of those. And it was down to the old letters and the postman and all that sort of stuff. So we had met and we had lived apart. We had continued to have that relationship across seas for just over a year. And then Joanne had come here to live and to study. And then shortly after that, we got married in 2004. We had, I suppose, everything that anyone would ever really need. We had reasonable jobs, we had reasonable house, we had good friends, we had good church. We had everything we needed, and probably a little bit more than what we needed. Some things that we just wanted, but we definitely had everything that we needed. So life was good. We travelled, we spent a lot of time together, we ate out a lot together, all the normal things, just the perfect relationship that any new married couple would aspire to. And then I'm going to jump forward a little bit into 2012. 2012 was the birth of our firstborn son, Zach. Zach was born in Craigavon Hospital on the 5th of September 2012, and this was, of course, a very, very special occasion in our lives. Those special occasions when you have, where you can hold your firstborn baby for the very first time. Those special occasions when you can call your parents and you can say to them, you know, Zach has been born, do you want to come and visit? We went through all of those things, the opportunity to wash your baby for the first time, to dress them for the first time. But that wasn't really what our experience was. Whilst it was good and whilst it was special, it was an extremely different experience from what maybe just popped into your head just now. See, just about 24 hours before that, Zach had been due to be born that very same week. And we had went along to the hospital with some concerns. Joanna went across with a really extreme headache. And throughout that day, the headache grew progressively worse. And on that Sunday evening, we had went across to the hospital just to double check that everything was okay. And on that night, we went through all of the motions and we realized that things was unraveling very, very quickly. You know, whenever the first doctor comes into the room and they put on a scan and they start to say, maybe this scanner's not working properly, perhaps we'll go and get a different scanner. And they brought in a different scanner, and over a period of half an hour or an hour, we started to realise there's now three doctors in this room, and I started to realise that probably this isn't good. And after quite a long period of time, the doctor put her hand on Joanne's leg, and then there was this silence which probably lasted for about 3 or 4 seconds. But it felt like it went on and on and on. And she took a gulp, and then she said, I'm sorry. And I describe that I'm sorry as the first of 1,000 I'm sorrys that we heard over the next coming days and the weeks, because little did we know that over the period of the previous weeks that things had started to go unwell in the pregnancy and that Zach had lost his little life. And so we were left in this situation where we were this young married couple. We'd done all the things that we had wanted to do. We had travelled, we had enjoyed life, and now it was time to settle down and to have our family. And all of a sudden, a lot of that started to unravel very, very quickly. We were left in a scenario where over the next 72 hours we had to go through, which was one of the strangest events that anyone could ever experience. So, so tough. But yet in the middle of it, it was so, so beautiful. It was all of the things that I described. It was the birth of our son, seeing his face for the first time. It was washing him. It was dressing. It was all of the things which we wanted to do, but it was all tinged with this horrible, horrible pain of sadness. And so that's why the first part of my testimony I had said was empty hands. The loneliest walk that we had ever have to do was that day, was to from the hospital to the car park. That's the time when you normally leave the hospital with your son or your daughter with you, and at that stage we walked empty-handed, the longest walk that we had ever to do. And so we proceeded into life over the next few days, which was just this amazing roller coaster of uncertainty, of grief, of doubt, of uncertainty, of questions in our mind. Both of us were working in the healthcare sector, in the community sector. We'd spent our whole lives up to now looking out for other people, caring, building programs, reaching those most in need. And in little moments at night time, you started to wonder, where did this all go wrong? How could I have done all of this all of my life, and yet I seem to have got the raw deal? So we had to proceed to make those funeral arrangements. And I can remember one particular part of it really, really distinctly. And that was whenever we had to go across the bridge. If any of you knows Portadown, you come into Portadown, and you go across this particular bridge over Eden Derry. And that was a bridge which was between my house and the town. And I can remember very, very clearly going across I had gone across that bridge probably at least a couple of times every day, one way or another, but maybe more likely 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times. Very, very familiar part of my journey. I can remember that day sitting in the back of the car. I'm normally driving, I'm normally a driver. And I can remember sitting in the back of the car that day thinking, I'm not in control anymore. This is different. I'm always the driver. I always know where we're going, but all of a sudden, I don't know where my life's going. And I can remember thinking that time, my journey across this bridge will never be the same ever again. My life's changed forever. Nothing will ever be the same. We looked out the windows and we seen people going about their everyday business. We seen people shopping, seen people walking their dog. And it was just in my mind, how can people do all of these normal things? How can people get on with their lives? Have they not heard? Have they not heard where we are? And down in the shadows, there was this sign for many years. I don't know, maybe Paul will remember it. There was a big graffiti on the wall which said, "Hey, bridge people." And every time you drove across that bridge, you could look down and you could see that sign, "Hey, bridge people." And it really stuck in my heart that day that this bridge will never, ever be the same today. And so we stood in this country graveside just outside Rich Hill, and we had that opportunity to responsibility to lay our son to rest. See, we had called him Zach. We had known his name would be Zach for a long time, since we kind of knew that it was going to be a boy. And we had said that we would keep what his sex was and what his gender was from anyone else. It'd be a secret, and what his name was. And one night, there was this really weird conversation that happened at the dinner table. And we were talking about whether you should physically punish a child or not. And there's loads of family gathered round, and there was lots of different opinions. And some said every child needs a wee smack. And some other people were saying, no, No, you shouldn't be smacking children. There was this variety of conversation going on. And this was just whenever we were close to the end of the pregnancy. And I banged the table and I said, if any of you ever smack my sack, you will know about it. And then there was this silence for about 30 seconds. Then everybody said, it's a boy, and they knew the name as well. So straight after that, I mean, our house started to become flooded with all of this stuff, which was personalized. We had all these beautiful plaques on the wall. We had blankets with his name on it. And I suppose whenever, or so many of us, you know that experience when you're expecting new life to come into your house. It's like a crescendo which you're working towards all the time. You're building up towards it. And then all of a sudden, that is pulled away from you so, so quickly. So one of the hardest tasks that we had to do was to go back into that space and to start to take all of that away again. And in those days, my wife said to me, this is over. I am never going to do this again. This is definitely the end. We can't face this again. We can't face the risk of that. And of course, I said that I completely support you in that decision. So all of a sudden, our futures were looking completely different. Our futures, it wasn't just about we had lost our little baby boy, but we had lost all of those future birthdays, all of those Christmases, all of those holidays, the teenagers, the grandkids. All of that all of a sudden started to become very, very different. Those were really, really difficult days. But at the graveside, there was this surreal experience where the pastor had read the passage, I am the good shepherd. And just as he read that up on the hillside, there was a herd of sheep and they all started to bleat. And just in that moment, I just realized that it was just God using nature and using the words of the pastor that God was speaking into her heart. You see, we walked with empty hands, but we walked with joyful hearts in the middle of all of that. And I don't say that just now in reflection, but we felt it very, very real. In the middle of all of that, we felt an overwhelming peace of God in all of that. How did we feel an overwhelming peace of God in our hearts? Well, just as a boy, as a five-year-old boy, I had put my faith and trust in Jesus Christ. And I don't know where I would be tonight if I hadn't walked that journey with Jesus Christ at my side. I was brought up in a good home, brought up in a Christian home. We were sent along to the Free Presbyterian Church and to the Sunday school, so we were, and the children's meeting, so we were really, really well grounded in the Word of God. And everyone in our house knew from a very early age that you needed to put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ to be your Savior, that there only was one way to heaven. So as a little boy, of 5 years old, I had just come home from what was called the children's bright hour in those days, and I had asked my mother, can I get saved tonight? And we sat down in front of an old open fire and I gave my heart and my life to Jesus Christ. And little did I know that a few hundred miles away, maybe 1,000 miles away, somewhere in Portugal, just a couple of years later, that my wife Joanne would sit down in very, very similar circumstances and she would give her heart and her life to Jesus Christ. See, we had never even knew that each other had existed, but somewhere upstream, God was working. Somewhere back upstream where we couldn't see, God had already put motions and plans in place. And so I grew up in that home and in that family. And I had, before that, I had quite a difficult teenage years as well. As a teenager, I was quite sick and quite ill. If anyone is familiar with ME, or chronic fatigue syndrome, at the age of about 13, I had started to feel very unwell. And suddenly was coming home from school every other day and eventually just no longer had the energy to go to school at all. So over the period of about 5 years, from I was about 12 or 13 right through to I was 17, 18, I didn't have the ability to go to school and was pretty much housebound. So I had left school with absolutely nothing. I'd left school with no education, with no GCSEs, and I especially left school with this big gap in my life. Then I went on that mission trip and I had met Joanne. And once I had met Joanne, you can imagine, after having quite a difficult few teenage years, this was all start of the process of me putting my life back together again. When we started to enjoy ourselves and travel, we started to have a family. This was the process of me, after quite a difficult childhood, having the opportunity to put my life again back together again. And all of a sudden, just like this, it started to unravel. And so we began this journey where we talk about walking in ugly shoes. I had the opportunity to join a group called SANS, which stands for Stillbirth and Neonatal Death. And they were a great support, and we had the opportunity to work with them over a number of years. And they do this thing on the North Coast every year called the Ugly Shoe Walk. And you've probably heard of that phrase, you don't know what it's like till you walk in my shoes. So they took that and they turned it into something positive. So every year they all put on these shoes and they decorate them. Some people put really weird ribbons. Some people tie tin cans to them. Some people do crazy stuff to them, and they'll walk from Portrush to Port Stewart. And the whole thing is, the message is that some people walks in ugly shoes. People have told us that you'll go through all of these stages of grief, all of these seven stages of grief where you'll have to be angry and you'll have to question and all of this. But we really felt that that wasn't for our lives at all. And I can remember about a week after that situation where Zach had died, we had sat down and we had such a heart-to-heart chat with each other, myself and Joanne. And we had to have a conversation to say, are we ever going to laugh again? Are we ever going to serve again? Are we ever going to work again? Are we ever going to enjoy ourselves again? And I don't know, I'm sure we've all been through grief of some shape or other. But I would just say to you, don't let the world tell you what your grief should look like. We had to make a really, really conscious decision. So we decided the first Sunday afterwards, we're going back to church. We were back up on the North Coast. We went to church very, very bravely. Dunseverick Baptist, I'm sure some of you know it, packed, absolutely packed. We went in, arrived late, thinking we'll slip in late and leave early. Of course, there wasn't two seats together, so we got separated. And what do you think was happening? There was a dedication the very first Sunday. I didn't even know Baptists did dedication, but I think it was a setup. But so we had to go through all of those firsts in our lives. We went back to our own church the next Sunday, and that's the very first song that they sang was How Sweet to Hold a Newborn Baby. You can imagine the pain and the sting in all of that. But we had to make a conscious decision that we were going to get up, that we were going to get on, because through it all we could see God's goodness, we could see God's hand. You know, the only one thing that we ever wanted for Zach's life, when we were praying right throughout his pregnancy, we didn't want him to be rich. We didn't want him to be famous, and we didn't want him to be popular. The only thing, whenever we prayed, we always asked that God would use his life to impact others. And so the first little slide that's going to come on the screen is this little photograph which we had just snapped in the hospital. And I wasn't sure if it was okay to bring a camera in or not, but I decided it was slightly before there was phone cameras on phones, so I brought the camera in, and we managed to snap this one anyhow. And so after a week or so, we decided that we would print this little verse on it. God is our refuge and our strength, a helper who is always found in times of trouble. Therefore, we will not be afraid. We had decided that we would lean on God, that he would be our refuge and our strength. So we printed about 500 of these, and we started to give it out. Every time we told our story, we started to give it to people and said, that's our story, and that's our little Zach. But that's what our God can do. He is still our refuge and our strength. Our life has fallen apart. Our life is shook, but God has not changed. And we left them even into the hospital with some of the midwives that had looked after us. And about 3 months after, we had dropped these off, we got a phone call from a friend, and they said, I just wanted to let you know that I have a friend called Emily who is a midwife in the hospital. And she looked after you, and I don't even remember her being there, but she looked after you and your wife whenever you were there over that period of time, and was there when Zach was born, etc. And said that little card was sitting there a few weeks after you had left it off, and she had come to a really low place in her life, and she looked at that card and she gave her life to Jesus just a few days after she had read that card. And so we've had the opportunity to meet her a few times as well. You see, isn't God good? God answers prayer. It wasn't exactly the way that I would have written the script or Joanne, but actually God had a different plan in all of it. And you know, as we started to put our life back together again, we started to get involved in church. We had the opportunity to serve and to worship, and we had the opportunity to laugh again. I can remember the first time we laughed again, we cried straight after it because we felt very, very guilty. And then we chatted and we said, it's okay to laugh again. It's definitely okay to enjoy life again, because that God still has something to do in our hearts and our lives. But about a year after, Joanne had a dream. So I was driving along in the car one day, and she said to me, all of a sudden, she says, I think we're going to try again. Well, I almost went over the hedge, because that was the furthest thing from my mind at the moment. Just, it was far too scary. It was far too daunting for me. She says, I had a dream. She said, I had a dream that I had a healthy boy called Joshua with blonde hair and blue eyes. And I, well, you know, whenever you have to interpret someone else's promise from God, it's a little bit difficult. Now, are you sure it wasn't just a dream? She says, no, this wasn't just a dream. She says, this was definitely from God. She says, I've dreamt my whole life, but this was more than a dream. This was a message from God. You see, that was, I suppose, not a bit of a challenge for us, but Zach had been this dark-haired boy. Neither myself or Joanne is blonde, and I was really trying to wonder how this would work out. So over the period of weeks and months, we'd found out that we were pregnant again. And of course, during that scan, we found out it was a boy. So I had a real problem. I said, if this is a girl, like, we're going to have to call him Joshua one way or another. So it was a boy. We were halfway there, and I started to believe, God, could this really be of you again? And we went right through the pregnancy, and it wasn't a perfect, happily ever after story, I can assure you. It was very, very difficult. We had a long spell in intensive care. There were moments when the doctors told us this might not work out. We're not out of the woods here. There's lots of concerns. It was an absolute roller coaster. In fact, it was so bad. We were in intensive care for about a fortnight, and someone had sent a photograph of me holding our baby boy, Joshua, to my mum, and my mum asked, who is that holding Joshua? I had aged so much in a fortnight. So stressful. But the next slide just shows this is God's promise. God promised that he would give us a healthy blonde-haired boy called Joshua, and wow, did he answer his promise. Shortly after that, Joanne had another dream. And she had this dream where she... We were worshipping in church, and we had two boys with us who were worshipping in church together, and she took that as a promise from God that we were to go again. Off we went on this journey again, exactly the same, very, very complicated. Last minute had to end up going private, all of that sort of stuff. Another long spell in intensive care, and then 2 years later, the next little photo, along came Harry, and that's us just last year on the North Coast. Isn't God good? God keeps his promises. In the middle of all of it, in the middle of all of the heartache, you know, somebody said something to myself just after, I think it was just after Josh was born and before Harry was born. It was just before Josh was born, and I didn't understand it. And now I understand it in part. We had a previous miscarriage and then the stillbirth with Zach as well. We were never going to have four kids. And somebody said, come out of church. We had went out of church quite upset one night over just something. Nothing was said wrong, but just something which had really tugged at our hearts and made us emotional. And this lady called Karen from our church came out and said, I had exactly the same experience as you. And I went on to have two kids afterwards. And she says, the only thing I can think of in my mind is, she says, if I hadn't had that loss, I wouldn't have what I have now. And as I look at Josh and Harry now, is it the path where I would have wanted to end up there? Of course it's not. But would I choose it if it meant ending up with Josh and Harry? Probably. Because God knows. God knows exactly what we need in our lives. What would we do if it wasn't for having God on our side? As we walked through that journey, we had the most surreal moments. At times, we had out-of-body experiences, and I don't say that lightly, because sometimes I'm skeptical when people say that, but we had these moments when we were looking at ourselves because our own strength just wouldn't carry us anymore, and we knew that God was carrying us. We absolutely knew that God was carrying us. There's so many instances in the Bible when people are running into difficult circumstances. And I'm not sure what your circumstances are tonight. That's just my story. And the ending of my story might be very different from the ending of your story. But maybe you've got a story of your own here tonight. And I feel that God has put a couple of thoughts on my heart that is for someone here tonight. I feel that very, very strongly. You know, I have worked in the youth and community sector, as Paul has said, and Esther has worked along with us on some projects over the years, and she'll be familiar with this. One of the things that we do is when we bring kids in, we will put out lots and lots of colouring competitions or colouring sheets as a little filler. You know, whenever some kids arrive early and they're kind of waiting on the others together. So we'll have these this table all spread out with all of these colouring in. So kids will just come and they'll grab a few pens and do whatever they want with them. But over the years, some of these have been photocopied and photocopied and photocopies of photocopies, and you know how this, some of them starts to get a little bit blurry, and sometimes some of them are horrible outlines. Sometimes you have, like, I don't know, skyscrapers or superheroes or whatever the things is that you don't like, and sometimes you'll have all of these beautiful outlines which are maybe meadows and fields and natures, maybe some of the things that you would like. And you know, it never ceases to amaze me what a child who has the attention to detail can do with a messy outline. It isn't really that important what the outline is. I've seen some beautiful pictures of meadows and it comes back covered in scribbles and scrapes and it's a complete disaster. That's Hotspur Harry. He starts something and he doesn't finish it. It doesn't matter how nice the outline is, he'll make a mess of it somewhere. And sometimes you can give somebody a picture of a snail and it'll come back coloured in so beautifully. And the kids will just say, you know, you'll just think to yourself, haven't you done a tremendous job of it? I just wonder tonight what your outline looks like. Maybe like mine, it's not the cleanest and it's not the prettiest. But, you know, we've got to let God decide what the end product will be. Can I just say to you tonight, if you're here and you're in a situation where you feel like you're giving up, I don't know what your circumstance is. You've been battered a bit by the world, by your family, maybe even by church. Maybe you have run into circumstances with financially, your career, your home life, friends. Maybe it's your health, your mental health, whatever it might be. Don't give up. God can fill in the blanks. God can colour in something absolutely beautiful. There's a few instances in the Bible. You remember the widow who had lost her husband and she was at risk of losing her two sons. And she went along and she met Elijah and she said to Elijah said to her, "What have you got in your house?" And she said, "Nothing. Except." Her first answer was nothing. "Except I have a jar of oil in my cupboard." And Elijah said, "Go and gather your jars." Nothing except. Maybe you think you've nothing left to give. Nothing left to give to God, nothing left to give to society. Except. What is the one thing that you do have? Remember the servant who had the talent, who he buried it in the ground. Some people had five talents, some people had two, and he was left with the one. I wonder, did he look at his one and did he think, my one's insignificant? It's never going to be what other people's are. I have been dealt a difficult deal here. And he buried it in the ground. The Bible says he buried it out of fear. He buried it in the ground and Jesus rebuked him for it. Don't bury your talent in the ground. You might think on the outside that you've got a rough deal in life. Don't bury your talent in the ground. Do you remember even Mary, whenever she was about to give birth to Jesus, you can imagine the situation that Mary was in with Joseph. Her reputation was in danger. All of a sudden she was with child in an unmarried state, her whole reputation, and she was about to give birth to the greatest miracle that would ever happen to the world, the birth of Jesus Christ, and yet the angel comes to her and says, "Don't fear." Even Mary, on the very edge of the miracle, was standing in fear where the angel had to say to her, "Don't fear." Doesn't matter what your circumstances are, what the accusation is, what the rumor is, that God is not finished with you. Remember whenever David stood before Goliath and he took on the giant and he could look around and everyone else was in their armor, everyone else was prepared, everyone else had the best of kit, and David stood there with what was in his hand and he was the one that was able to defeat the giant. You remember Moses with a stutter and he said, "I have nothing to give God," because of a physical impediment. And yet Moses went on to give us so much of what we base our truth on today. I was thinking today of that story of at the pool of Bethesda where Jesus went down. And we know the story in the Bible where the pool is there And it says that there was a lame man who was there, and he was waiting there for many, many years, and Jesus came along and had this conversation with him. Now, that's a very, complicated and difficult passage to understand. Some people would say, the Bible says that there was this stirring of the waters all of the time, and that the lame man, or the scenario was that the first person who would get into the water would be the person who was healed. So the lame man had said to Jesus, I do not have the ability to get into the pool first. Somebody always gets there first, so therefore I cannot be healed. Now there's lots of different opinions about that, whether the pool was actually stirred by God or whether it was stirred by nature. If you read lots of research behind it, there is lots and lots of different theories behind it. But some documents will say that the stirring of that pool happened around the start of in around the time when Jesus was born. Historical documents outside of the Bible would indicate that for about 30 years that pool had started to stir. And what would happen would it would be connected to the Feast of the Jews. And you know, at the Feast of the Jews, thousands of people would come to Jerusalem. And the one person who would come along that time would also be Jesus. And this isn't from the Bible, it's from some historical documents. But it seemed to indicate that every time Jesus would come, there would be this stirring of the waters. And one person would be healed. And Jesus goes across to this person and he says to him, do you want to be well? Do you want to be well? There was times in my life where I needed somebody to say to me, do you want to be well? Because there's times in my life that I was incredibly low. But Jesus speaks to the man at the pool and he says, do you want to be well? And the man says, I can't be well because there's someone who always gets to the pool, first of all. There's someone who always beats me to it, and therefore I can't be well. You know what Jesus' response to him was? Stand up. Wasn't you've got to wait to the next time? Wasn't you've got to try harder? Wasn't maybe in the years to come you'll be able to get into the well? Jesus just says, tell him stand up. The miraculous thing was it wasn't even that Jesus put his hands on him and healed him and then he stood up. Jesus just said, tell him stand up. Get up. Whatever's happened in your life, it's not over. Get up. There's work for you to do. Jesus wants to take your imperfection and he wants to do something absolutely incredible through it. We had decided to do a charity event. And we were cycling from Portrush to Dundalk for a charity event. Craziest thing in the world I'd ever done. But a neighbour had talked us into it. And this was to raise money and to raise awareness for SANS. And I said, come on, we can do it. No problem at all. So we started a train. And there's one day that we, just one Saturday morning, he said, come on, we're going to Rathray Island on the bike. You need to get your miles up. You need to Rathray Island on the bike. Rathray Island's a right run on the car. And we said, not today. So I'd sent him a message, but he hadn't got it. We're not going today. Don't think we're going to do this cycle after all. It's too much. And he shouted through the letterbox at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, get up! And whoa, because someone encouraged us to get up, Jesus says to you today, stand up. Don't be like the man at the pool. Stop waiting and lying for that perfect opportunity to come. Ritual, religion, waiting for the right time, needing to go via someone else. I believe personally that Jesus walked into the pool that day that challenged the stereotypes. That no longer would we have to wait when he wanted to do something in our lives. No longer would we be dependent on someone to carry us to someone anymore. That just directly between Jesus and the person, he said, stand up. And the person stood up and got whole. Could I encourage you today that regardless of your age, regardless how young you are and how old you are, that Jesus has something fantastic to do in your life. Regardless of how blurry your outline is, regardless of how ugly your shoes are. You know what we realized? Sometimes ugly shoes will take you to some very beautiful places. Very beautiful places. Especially when you have Jesus at your side. Can I recommend Jesus to you today? If you're a Christian, stand up. and allow him to colour in the spaces. Allow him to walk you by your hand. But if you're not a Christian, how do you face these challenges without God at your side? Somebody soon, very soon after Zach had died, gave us this little book about Shall We Know Our Children in Heaven? Wow, we went away with such assurance from so many stories in the Bible that when little ones go, they go straight into the arms of Jesus. And what a peace that is to us. We stood that day with such a peace in our heart, knowing that this parting is temporary. Because we knew that we had our faith and trust in Jesus Christ. I stand here tonight, above all of the story, I just stand here tonight to recommend Jesus to you. Because he is faithful. He is so faithful. I heard them practicing the song as we come in. What a faithful God we have. I think it was that once. Something about the faithfulness of God, anyway. There was a period in my life when I couldn't sing it. But now, with the benefit of hindsight, I can say that he has been so, so faithful. And I love him so much. I pray that if you don't know Jesus Christ as your Savior, that you'll taste and see of the goodness of God. And your
love is great. Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. If you would like any more information, have a look at our website at www.ballymoneyelam.com.